From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly look at all things California politics. I'm John Myers from KQED, and here in the studio across from the state capitol.
Over the river.
Over the river and through the woods. Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, dressed very fall-like today.
It is downright autumnal out there.
It's nippy. It's chilly. The seasons are changing, finally, and which means, I guess, election day is around the corner. Finally. Seems like a long election season.
Yes. Very long.
Very long. Well, it's only hours to go, of course, as final weekend here coming up and candidates nationally and statewide and ballot measures. And that's pretty much the focus of our podcast today, because it would be kind of crazy not to talk campaign politics this close to Election Day.
We can talk about the budget next week and the week after that.
Is not going anywhere, as we continue to be reminded of time and time again. So let's start off talking about some new poll numbers. Here at the end of the week, as folks are listening to this on Friday over the weekend, we have a new field poll, statewide poll on three ballot measures?
Yeah, and the presidential race. And it seems like it's a good time to be a chicken in California and a bad time to be John McCain. Getting off to a tremendous start here.
Wow, the podcast is just really this is a keeper.
I figure we get off the rails early and it gives us more time to recover.
Please, go ahead. I have nothing to come back on that.
Well, we saw the new field poll out today that showed Barack Obama 20 points ahead of John McCain.
Yeah, I mean, huge numbers, and that confirms, too, what PPIC had seen, too. I mean, double digits.
Right. And then on the most controversial initiatives, there's still a big fight over the gay marriage initiative. About 49% of those polled said that they're going to vote against Proposition 8, which would be the constitutional ban on gay marriage. 44% would vote yes, and there's still a multi-million-dollar campaign. We've been tracking this money daily. And every day, the biggest donations coming in are to the yes and no on 8 campaigns, you know, a couple million dollars a day.
Any sense of where we are yet? I mean, we were near 60 million combined or north of it as of, what, last week? I guess we're even more so.
Yeah, it's consistently $2 million a day on either side, at least. And I expect that to go on for the next couple of days here. I mean, we're getting to the point where, you know, money can only do so much. All the TV time is bought. All the mail pieces are going to be in the mail in the next day or two here.
But the polling seems to indicate this is a toss up.
Yeah,
this is a toss up, and it has been rare, has it not, in recent years in California ballot measures that we've gone into Election Day not really knowing whether a measure will pass or fail.
Yeah, there are very few.
There have been very few lately. It seems that the public has really kind of gotten split. This one, we have no idea.
And this is an issue that I think people have a sort of a visceral gut reaction on both sides. You know, what's interesting is how the high turnout and the expected Obama landslide here in California may impact Proposition 8. A lot of the targeting from the Yes on 8 folks have focused on trying to sort of split the Obama vote, whether that's targeting Latino voters or targeting some more conservative elements of like African-American church-going voters. And there's been real splits in those communities on their feelings on this initiative.
And they've continued to move their campaign strategy about the possible impact in schools and the teaching of same-sex marriage, even so far to the fact where the Yes on 8 campaign challenged Jack O'Connell, the superintendent of public instruction, to a debate this week. I wanted to do a statewide television debate, which, of course, didn't happen, wasn't going to happen.
Right.
But again, trying to get some attention, some mileage out of this issue about the schools.
And it seems to have worked. I mean, that they've been very successful and very clever about tweaking the conversation sort of on the education portion of this rather than gay marriage itself or getting this ban into the Constitution.
Well, the new poll talked about another ballot measure, Proposition 2, which we've alluded to in really kind of poor taste terms at the beginning of the
or pork
podcast.
Taste. No.
Oh,
all right.
You are just on fire today. Prop 2, which deals with the treatment of farm animals and
yes.
the confinement of veal calves and pigs and chickens.
Pigs have to be able to spread their wings or something like that, right?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Pigs had wings.
Yes.
But really has focused on chickens and the egg laying industry and the egg farming industry. This poll, if it's true and if it holds up, I mean, this is a fairly landslide according to a field. In favor of new, more humane, as one side calls them, abilities of rights for the animals.
Right. And this would have a big impact, not just in California, but, you know, California imports, I think more than 90% of its eggs. I think Iowa is the big egg producer. Is that right? Is it Iowa? Somebody call in. This isn't a live call-in show?
No.
Where am I?
Caller 2.
Who am I? Why am I here? It's my Stockdale moment.
It is being seen as a model for the rest of the country. We'll leave it at that, perhaps. Yeah.
But it'll have big impacts if it passes on egg farming nationally. Right now, the latest poll numbers show it with about 60% approval rating. That's better than 2-1. It's ahead 60-27 here with only 13% undecided just less than a week before Election Day.
Yeah, so those seem like pretty strong numbers. And then the new poll also talked about Prop 11, the redistricting proposal, which I want to talk a little bit about because I spent a lot of time on the air this week dissecting redistricting and Prop 11. But there are a lot of undecided still. I mean, well, let's get, what do our numbers say? You're the numbers man.
The numbers, 45% in favor, 30% against, and 25% undecided. Now, typically, I think less than a week out, if an initiative is only at 45% in the polls, that's bad news. But what makes this one different, I think, is a couple of things. Number one, the large number of undecided voters. There's still a quarter of the electorate that's undecided, according to the field poll. And also the fact that the campaign in this is really one-sided. The governor has raised a couple of million dollars on behalf of this initiative, and the Yes on 11 campaign is on the air. The No on 11 campaign has, you know, bought up a lot of slate mailers, but there's not enough money for TV. There isn't the mobilization against this initiative that there was against the last redistricting initiative, which we saw on the ballot in 2005.
And I think certainly the governor and the Prop 11 campaign both would hope that the ongoing angst over state finances and the state budget and what happened with the budget this summer in the legislature would only fuel people to go to the polls on Tuesday and say, yes, we want to change redistricting. We don't want the legislature to draw its own maps anymore.
Yeah, and we saw a high-profile Democrat state treasurer, potential gubernatorial candidate, Bill Lockyer, come out in favor of Prop 11 this week. So, you know, I think anytime you get sort of a people who've been there in the, you know, through the wars. Remember, Bill Lockyer admitted to voting for Governor Schwarzenegger during the recall. Much to the consternation of many Democrats. But that can only help the Prop 11 campaign. Now they just need to close the deal with some of those undecided voters.
Well, and then spending just a moment on Prop 11, as I referred to, I did a couple of long pieces on redistricting this week on our program on the California Report. And what I find interesting about the campaign and most challenging about the campaign is the way Governor Schwarzenegger sells redistricting. He sells it as a way to increase competition, to create more competitive seats in the legislature, and to create more moderates, more compromise, more people willing to cross out of their ideological corners, as he calls it, and get together and work on issues. The reality, though, when you talk to researchers who know how redistricting is done, and it's an arcane issue, you know, it's only done once every 10 years. We draw the maps for the legislature and Congress and the Board of Equalization. But when you talk to the experts about redistricting, they will tell you that you're not going to create very many competitive districts. Even when you can create competitive districts, you don't necessarily get a competitive race. And that if you're trying to bring more moderates into the legislature, it's not a very good way of doing that either. And there are multiple reasons for a lot of this. I mean, one of the things I did in one of the stories that I went out and reported is I went and looked for districts that are quote-unquote competitive this year, you know, where the registration numbers are largely even between Democrats and Republicans. I actually think the model that the folks at UC Berkeley who do a lot of research on says that if Republicans have no more than a 2-point registration advantage or Democrats have no more than a 10-point registration advantage, historically it's been it could be a competitive district. There are 8 of those in the Assembly this year so far, based on data that we got a few weeks ago. We'll get new data here at the end of the week. They're not all competitive races. And the one that stuck out the most to me was here in the Sacramento region, the 5th Assembly District. Roger Nilo is the incumbent. He's a Republican. He's the vice chairman of the Assembly Budget Committee. His district is only a 2-point Republican district. And yet, there really is no race. He has a Democratic challenger who I spoke to, a very nice young man. But the party has written that district off. And so, to me, it's a way of showing that it's not just about competition. The power of incumbency is huge. Name recognition, money, all these things that Prop 11 doesn't deal with. Redistricting could be part of it. But I wonder, the larger point being, I wonder if voters say yes to Prop 11 and buy the governor's sales pitch, will they not feel somewhat disappointed 3, 4, 5, 6 years hence when the maps are drawn and the Capitol still works the way it works?
Well, and I think the big question that, and I think that we're going to hear the governor begin to make this case after the election, is that redistricting is only the first step towards competitive districts.
Right.
If you took redistricting out of the hands of the legislature for legislative districts and then coupled that with an open primary system, which I think the governor is going to be pushing for.
Which he's pushed for before. But,
right, and which California voters have approved before and has been thrown out by the courts, and then they voted on a – and they voted for closed primaries, and we could see this one coming back in a couple of years. But that combination of redistricting and the open primaries may increase the competition, with the latter perhaps having more to do with competitive districts than any map making. But I think that, you know, sort of telegraphing the governor's steps here, that I think that's where this is headed, where before we draw the next round of maps in 2012, we're going to see the governor campaign to get open primaries back in California.
And it'll be interesting if he does that to see what it is he wants, because, again, as I referred to a moment ago, he did endorse an open primary proposal that was on the ballot back in 2004.
Right.
He endorsed it, but he didn't campaign for it. He didn't do anything for it, and it was defeated by the voters. There's been talk of open primary again. In particular, there's one initiative that's already been filed by Steve Peace, a former longtime state lawmaker, who I spoke to, and he modeled it after the open primary system that the courts have upheld in Washington State.
Right.
And thinks that this could be the avenue. And, of course, you do need an Arnold Schwarzenegger with his fundraising prowess and his visibility to get something like that out there. But I think some people will step back and say at the final analysis, the governor has always said he cared about this, but it's kind of waxed and waned, and he's gone on to other things. And, you know, is it too late for him to really have an effect? I mean, he is on the way out the door. And he does not have the power at the polls he used to. I think Prop 11 will be a good test, by the way, about where the governor stands with the voters. Would you agree? Because there really hasn't been anybody else out there who makes the case like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
But, you know, what could be interesting is if you believe what you read in Willie Brown's column in the San Francisco Chronicle, you know, what happens if there's an initiative on the 2010 ballot, say June or maybe even the special election ballot, to open up the state's primary system, and it is not only endorsed by Arnold Schwarzenegger, but endorsed by Dianne Feinstein, who you know, may benefit, not that she would necessarily need any help in a gubernatorial primary, but could benefit from an open primary and has endorsed open primaries in the past. Remember, Democrats, what the courts have ruled on this issue in the past is that it's up to the individual political party to make their own rules. And Democrats in California already allow declined estate voters to participate in their primaries. You can now, if you're a declined estate voter, which I am, you can go on primary day and you request a Democratic ballot, a Republican ballot. I think you can request a Republican ballot even if it doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, you could at one point. The parties get to do it on a case by on an election by election basis. There was a point where the Republicans did that, but this past primary they did not.
So, or a nonpartisan ballot, and the Democratic votes or the nonpartisan votes, declined estate votes, do count in Democratic primaries. You know, the courts have ruled that's up to the individual parties. I don't know much about the Washington system, even though I lived there for 2 years. I'm ashamed to say.
You've been.
No, I'm not ashamed to say that I lived there, but I was a registered Californian still. Can I say that?
Keep going.
Moving on.
Keep going.
Moving on. I lived many places at many times.
That's another podcast.
Yeah. Whew. It's warm in here.
So, Anthony, so it remains to be seen. I think that's your major point, right?
Right.
In summary.
Thank you.
In summary.
Where were you in college?
Try to pull you out of your circular reasoning. Well, anyway, so those new poll numbers will be interesting. I think we've got a lot of races we'll be watching on election night. You know, we've got 12 ballot measures. I don't know that people are going to watch all 12, because I think some people feel like some of these are going to be very hard sells.
Could you name all 12?
I can name all 12. But I choose not to.
I don't want to show off.
No, actually, because as soon as I was going to do it, I knew I'd get it wrong. It was almost like where John McCain couldn't remember the fifth Secretary of State that endorsed him on the Sunday morning talk show the other morning, and he looked bad. I would look bad. Yeah. I just choose not to.
Prop 12, veterans bonds.
Veterans bonds. Yeah. Yes,
that's the one.
Well, but we did find out this. Let me make one other thing about this. We did find out this week where the governor stands.
Yes.
On all 12, from his political campaign team, and the only surprises. I didn't think there were really any major surprises, but the only surprises were that he is neutral, and I joked with one of his campaign people in an email, I would love to vote neutral.
How do you vote neutral?
Yeah, right.
You can do that in Nevada, but we can get to that.
He's neutral on Prop 6 and 9, which are the kind of two get-tough-on-crime measures on the ballot, one being about penalties for gang infractions and more law and order, get-tough-on-crime, more penalties for particular crimes, and Prop 9, the victim's rights one, which would give victims more rights, and also it would make some changes to the whole system as well, you know, some of the broader system right. issues as well. He's neutral on both of those. And he's been very pro get tough on crime initiatives in the past.
Right. Well, these are initiatives that would cost more money.
Well, that's one question. Right.
And I do think that, you know, he has a different appreciation for ballot box budgeting. You know, I think his attitudes on that generally, regardless of the policy specifics, the idea of budgeting at the ballot box, I think he's changed on. And this is a guy who started his political career in California with
Prop
49.
Box budgeting, yeah, with Prop 49 after school mandates of funding, and then moved on to Prop 1A, local government money protected, right. and then the fix on, you know.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, after a few years in office, sitting in the big chair, he might have a different perspective on some of that.
Okay, well, then there, in addition to ballot measures, there are a lot of races to watch,
yes.
races for the legislature. Maybe we start the conversation with the legislature this way. We know there are 48 Democrats and 32 Republicans currently in the Assembly.
Yes.
25 Democrats, 15 Republicans currently in the state Senate. We do not expect large changes in the Senate after Tuesday, come Wednesday morning. We, at best—
0-1.
Well, I was going to say, at best, it would be a pickup of one of the Democrats if the one race, which we'll talk about in a moment, went their way. In the Assembly, the conventional wisdom, the safe conventional wisdom, still is that the Democrats might pick up, at best, a couple,
two to three.
But if the Obama tidal wave comes in the way it has, there are prominent Republicans who have said to me, even this week, the Democrats could get the two-thirds. They could get 54 seats. It is not inconceivable if the tidal wave comes in. And as a result, we're watching money really push into some different races over the last few days.
Right. Yeah, and it's been interesting. I mean, money moving into places where Democrats, you know, haven't played before. I do think there is a danger for Republicans, especially if Obama ends up doing well on the East Coast. If Barack Obama holds New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, the race is over. The president, there's no way for John McCain to get to 270 if he can't win either Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, or Virginia. If that happens, Obama can lose Florida, could lose Ohio, could lose Nevada, New Mexico, Colorado, and still get to 270. And so if that happens around 5 o'clock, if that happens early on, 5, 6 o'clock West Coast time while the polls are still open here, there is a danger that Republicans will stay home and not vote.
We'll know Virginia's numbers by 4 o'clock California time because the polls close at 7 there.
Right, right. And there's been a lot of early voting in a lot of these places, and so there's been a lot of early tabulation too. So we should get some early numbers. But I don't know. I mean, those races, I mean, Virginia looks like it's going to be pretty close. You know, they may hold off. We'll see. But there is a possibility of you know, this wave moving from east to west. And the places where the Democrats are playing, they've put money into Farrell Masri, who's running for the third time against Audra Strickland down in the Ventura, Santa Barbara area.
AD 37.
37. They're putting money into John Eisenhut running against Bill Berryhill.
AD 26.
And I can't remember the woman's name who's running against Cameron Smythe
in
the 38th.
Actually, I don't have it written down right here.
I mean, that's one place where I don't know if they put money in there yet, but I keep hearing, you know, that's one. That would be a potential 54th, which which would be, I mean, incredible. You know, Cameron Smythe from Santa Clarita out near Magic Mountain for our California podcast listeners. And typically considered bedrock Republican territory, does have part of L.A. County there. But, I mean, I think if you see Cameron Smythe go down on Election Day, that something really remarkable has happened. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the money race just briefly, because I was trying to crunch a few numbers here at week's end just about where things stood on some of these races in the legislature. These numbers are approximate because of not only did I round them off a little bit, but also by the time you hear this podcast, you know, money gets moving in really fast in the final hours of a campaign.
Yeah.
But the most expensive legislative race this year.
Can I guess?
Yes.
The 80th?
No.
The 10th?
No.
The 80th?
Go to the other chamber.
Oh, I didn't know we were counting Senate.
I said legislative race.
Okay. You know, trick question.
You got to pay attention. Most expensive legislative race, state Senate, 19th district, Tom McClintock's old seat, yeah. Hannabeth Jackson, the Democrat, Tony Strickland, the Republican, $8.5 million combined, it looks like, between campaign accounts and independent expenditures there.
Right.
And that's been a real battle down there. I mean, you've got two candidates who are really very different, but who both seem to be trying to paddle into the moderate middle ground of a district where the demographics have been changing.
But this is a good example of how a competitive district doesn't necessarily mean that a moderate gets elected. I mean, whoever wins that race will not be considered a moderate.
No,
I mean,
they're a guaranteed left or right vote.
Now, they might have to watch themselves on certain votes in the chamber, you know, for 3.5 years from now when they're coming up for reelection. But neither Tony Strickland, the Republican, or Hannabeth Jackson, the Democrat, both former members of the Assembly, I don't think either one of those two could be considered a moderate.
Yeah, and yet, right, a very competitive seat when you look at the numbers. So that's tops in the legislature. Number two and number three, both in the Assembly. All the other real races are in the Assembly. There is another one in the Senate that's gotten some money, but it's kind of trickled off of
it.
So back to the Assembly.
Are we counting IEs on the spending here?
I am. Oh,
okay.
I am. Tops in the Assembly side would be, you said
it. The 80th?
The 80th,
yeah.
Out in the Palm Springs area between Manuel Perez, the Democrat, and Gary Gendron, the Republican. $5.8 million, or a little bit more than $5.8 million when you look at it so far.
Yeah.
That's a big race.
Yeah, very big. And you know, that's one where SEIU and organized labor has dropped a lot of money on behalf of Manuel Perez. You see Kevin DeLeon, the incoming appropriations chairman in the Assembly and would-be speaker, putting a lot of personal capital into that race and trying to deliver for Manuel Perez.
Next in the Assembly is 80-30 between Fran Flores, a Democrat, and Danny Gilmore, the Republican, a little bit more than $5.1 million there. The Hatfields and McCoy's
proxy war continues.
The proxy war between the Flores family and the Parra family,
and that's one that where Republicans could actually win on Election Day. That that could be a pickup. I think that's the only seat.
That's really the only place Democrats are playing defense.
Right, that is
the
only
spot. They're playing offense everywhere else.
You know, I'd heard some polling numbers last week, internal polling. I'd heard from some Democrats that showed Fran Flores down double digits. Subsequently, I've heard other things that it's closed considerably, and I think they're banking. That's one place where the Democrat is banking on a strong Obama performance to carry her across the finish line. Mm.
And then just rounding out the top five in the Assembly, number three is AD-78 in the San Diego area between Marty Block, the Democrat, and John McCain.
McCain, like the steel-cut oats. John McCain, oatmeal. Anyone?
Someone's going to have to watch those results to see whether he's helped or hurt by the McCain thing. But anyway,
Marty Block, Democrat. Tough district to be either McCain or McCain, I think. Mm.
Democrat Marty Block, Republican John McCain, $4.9 million about combined there. And again, we're combining campaign accounts and IEs.
And that's another big proxy, Marty Block, who is a member of a community college board, but also a trial lawyer. You're seeing a lot of trial lawyer money move in down there, and businesses and doctors are mobilizing against him. In that district.
Number four in the Assembly, I feel like I should be having some drum rolls, is AD-15, just behind the San Diego race. AD-15 is kind of a East Bay up to Sacramento, up to part of the San
Central
Joaquin
Valley
area.
Right.
Joan Buchanan is the Democrat. Abram Wilson is the Republican. They're at about $4.8 million in combined money in that race. That's another big race. Mm-hmm. And then rounding out the top five is AD-10 in the Sierra Foothills towards Amador County in that area. Alison Huber is the Democrat. Jack Sieglock is the Republican. About 3.4 million, a little bit more in that race.
And that district stretches all the way down into Sacramento. I mean, parts of Sacramento, like Watt Avenue. Anyway, that's very local.
That's very, right. If you're here in Sacramento, you totally got that.
Yeah.
But you add in a few other races that are looked at. We talked about them. But you get somewhere about 9 seats in the legislature. You get $37 million combined. You got some big bucks really being spent on some of these races.
Right.
And again, back to my, without harping too much on my Prop 11 redistricting competitive districts, some of these districts aren't technically competitive. Some of these have really pretty strong size number of Democratic majorities by registration, but they have been voting for Republicans these last few years.
Right.
AD 78, AD 80 are great examples of seats that the Democrats thought were theirs that they didn't have,
right.
And now they've every year tried to pick back up. Maybe this is the year because they're open seats.
Well, and there have been demographic changes in these districts. I mean, we're now getting towards the end of the cycle here since these maps were drawn. And so you always see some breakdown and change, you know, because the demographics of the state change so rapidly. But typically, you know, as you said before, Democrats have to have a larger registration advantage in order for their district to be considered safe. If Republicans have at least... I mean, I know you said a 2-point advantage, but really if a district is even registration with Republicans being even, with rare exceptions, sometimes like some places in the Silicon Valley, for example, you have a lot of decline to state voters, but they tend to break Democratic. In the Central Valley especially, you know, you need to have very, very strong Democratic majorities in order for Democrats to be competitive. And that's changing this year. I mean, the 10th is a place where Democrats have spent money the last 10 years. Deborah Gravert ran against Anthony Pichetti in 1998 out there, and they spent some money, not a lot, but that was another big Democratic year.
Of course, the district changed a lot after redistricting there.
Yeah.
It was drawn much more heavily for a Republican.
And
has been represented by Alan Nakanishi these last few years.
Right, for the last 6 years. Yeah. But it's a place where Democrats have looked at. It's always been a second, third tier. I think this year, you know, you look at the money being spent, that's elevated to a first tier race.
So, all right. So let's end this podcast by doing the absolute stupidest thing we could do. Let's make some predictions here.
Great. Since I'm so good at it.
No, I'll make some predictions too. We'll put us both on the record.
Okay.
I'm writing these down.
Okay.
All right. So let's deal with ballot measures first. Prop 8. Passes or doesn't pass?
I think Prop 8
ends same-sex marriage
narrowly failing.
Narrowly failing.
I think large Democratic. I just, you know, every poll I've seen. I mean, they show it closing, but every poll I've seen shows the no side with a plurality, and so I just think, come election day, that it goes down narrowly.
And so Anthony's a no. I'm also going to say no too. I think it's very. I agree with you. 51-49. I mean, it's a really contentious issue.
Yeah.
But again, whoever turns out of the, I could easily, I will not be surprised if it's 51-49 the other way,
right.
Because it's very close. I don't know how many ballot measures I want to do, so I'm just going to skip through to ones that I know more about.
I think
about.
The chickens will prevail.
Well, one way or the other, the chickens aren't going to prevail if you think about it.
Right. Well, these are just egg chickens. They're not fryers.
Fair enough. Prop 11, redistricting.
I think this is the year redistricting passes. I think that, you know, with no money being out there for a no campaign, a large undecideds, you're starting to see undecideds being moved, you know, in the last poll, if the field numbers are to be believed. It's slight. It's a three-point move from July to October. But all that movement is from undecided to yes. And, you know, I mean, they just need 20% of the remaining undecideds to get over the finish line. I think they'll be okay.
And I'm going to say no. I'm going to say it fails. And for the simple reason that there are a lot of undecideds, and I will think what a lot of people say, that, you know, undecideds tend to go no at a certain point. If they're this far out and they can't figure it out, I'm just not going to vote for it. I vote no. So you and I are split on that one. That'll
okay.
be fun. Okay, now let's just go to the broad legislature. We're not going to go every district.
Not every district.
Now, do the Democrats get 54 in the assembly?
No.
How many do they get?
50. Let's see. They get 51.
Good. I was glad you picked that, because I'm going to pick 52.
Okay.
And I could quibble over what district I'm actually going to pick that way. But I think there's an Obama tide. I think there's going to be a strong tide. I just don't think they can get that hurdle. I think some of those districts are just so hard.
So you think 10, 15, 78, 80, and hold the 30th?
Yeah.
That's not unreasonable.
Yeah, I think that could happen. In which case, the dynamic will be very interesting, will it not, to come back here and deal with not having to get six votes in the assembly, but two.
Yeah, but those two are going to be much tougher to get.
Do you think it gets harder when you get fewer?
I do think there's something else about getting to 54, and this is squarely on the governor. I think that the governor has a chance now to kind of start over. I mean, we have a whole new crop of legislators coming in. 25, I believe, is the number that are being termed out of the assembly, and then some others who are leaving early to go to the Senate. And that the governor really ran into problems, I think, because he didn't put on the charm offensive. And I think if the governor's smart and has learned from his past mistakes, he will embrace some of these new Republicans. I mean, I think there are some interesting people coming, you know, that we're already watching, Nathan Fletcher, an incoming Republican from San Diego. There are people who I think the governor will be able to establish contact with and establish some goodwill with. We won't see the situation where, remember, the Republicans putting on name tags when the governor came to talk to him in the middle of the budget standoff. I mean, I think having a good personal relationship and establishing some sort of rapport goes a long way into being able to collect votes when it comes budget time.
So 51 for Anthony, 52 for me. I wouldn't be surprised if I was wrong, and it was.
And
I wouldn't
would
be surprised
I.
if it was just 48. But actually, I would be surprised if 48.
Would.
I think 48 would be seen as a defeat for the Democrats.
Yeah, I think anything less than 50 would be seen as disappointing.
If they don't get 50, people will be surprised. And then, last but not least, Jackson Strickland in the Senate.
You know, again, I think it's close, and in this year, when it's this close, given what's going on nationally, I think you give an edge to Hannabeth Jackson. You know, this is another one that I'm surprised to hear myself say that. I mean, 3 months ago, I wouldn't have thought Hannabeth Jackson would have had much of a chance in that district. But looking a little closer at the district, I just assumed it was the old McClintock district, and it's not. It's different. And it's, I think, going to be a Democratic year. And so given those atmospherics, a slight edge to Jackson.
And just to be contrarian, I'm going to pick Strickland just to make it fun. Because I think I'm with you. I think I could go either way. I think that the demographics of the district still do favor a Republican.
And that's why I went 51 in the assembly. Yeah. I think that the 10th out here it's just tough. I mean, I know that the Democrats have the candidate they want. I know they've been able to push the message that they want, but I just think that registration in that district is tough for a Democrat to overcome.
And on all other races, like the governor, I'm going to vote neutral.
How do you do that in the voting booth?
I don't know.
Okay,
I'm going to ask a poll worker.
Good, but
see what they tell me.
Are you allowed to talk to poll workers? Don't they shoot you or tase you or something if you talk to them?
Don't tase me, bro. I never thought I'd end a podcast by saying that, but I think we do need to end. So we'll see how we did. Vote early, vote often. We'll see you next time.